I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We recording?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Hello. Welcome to the next episode, a special episode of Hardcore Listing.
You lucky tuckers.
Ooh. Yeah. Heard that one before?
No.
Did you just make that up?
Made it up, didn't I?
Yeah. It's pretty poor. So this is a little bonus to our regular Monday release.
Yes. We've been saving this one up. We've had this one in the can for a while.
So we've got a big release for you today. Big. It's Record Store Day, so yes. One of the exclusive releases on Record Store Day is the Elastica album, which has had some little bits of bobs done to it.
Yeah.
Go and grab your copy from your local independent record store. And yeah, we was lucky enough to have Justin from Elastica invite us down to Brighton to a studio.
It was our first proper trip out as the podcast Hardcore Listing crew, wasn't it?
And he spoke with us for a few hours, so this will be broken down into a few episodes.
Yeah, we could have it could have gone on for hours and hours and hours. We were having so it was really lots to talk about with Justin.
He's and it was really good because I've known Just quite a long time, and we, generally whenever we've hung out, it's been. You know, he's been DJing for us or whatever, and not really had a chance to really sort of get into some Britpop gold, really.
Man.
And he was totally open, and we didn't realise just how much of a little network all these bands were in. Like, you know, when he talks about who he lived with, and then he was in a band with them, and then he was in a band with and just then ended up going back and ending up drumming with Suede and whatnot. Just some real interesting stuff, and and he's a top lad as well. He's a real top.
Very
lad.
Very easy to get into conversation.
Discuss
about his story and also what he picked as well.
Yeah,
which was a lot of fun. And again, we probably have that up on a Spotify playlist for you, motherfuckers.
Definitely. Yeah. Go to Spotify and put in Hardcore Listing Elastica and then have a little listen. Shout outs.
76, our producer.
Yeah, let's get that one in first. And then let's get some love to the Podfather, Screw Pip, and our little family on the network, which is Stop and Search with
Jason Reed.
Sam, more excited.
Because I'm not into this whole duo in us doing it as a duo, this bit.
All right, you do it on your own.
All right. That's better. I feel more up for it now already. So, yeah, listen to the rest of the network, such as Stop and Search with Jason Reed, where you can hear a lot about the law enforcement.
Law what?
Law enforcement against prohibition is what Jason's part of, I do believe. Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage, where you can listen to the ins and outs of all different pros and cons about the different drugs that are available. What is it? It's not a pro.
I don't know. It's your thing. You've gone solo.
It's not anti-drugs. It's just you know.
I think the clue's in the title,
argument.
Chris.
Yeah. And also Tuesday Night Jaw with Jim Smallman, which is a what is it? Is it every Tuesday night?
You've gone solo.
Every Tuesday night discussing wrestling news. So that's it. Oh, and of course the original Distraction Pieces podcast with Scrublins, Pipikins. Yeah, so that's our network. Go on then, back over to you, mate. You can put your dummy back in now.
Really unprofessional, that. Really unprofessional. Trying to run a tight ship here. Just constantly clearing up your fucking mess. Really apologise for Chris's behaviour there. very, very selfish, man. Okay, please enjoy part one of Hardcore Listening Record Store Day special with Justin Welsh from Elastica. Enjoy.
Catch you soon.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listening, the podcast.
Okay, so today's guest is Just. How you doing, Just?
Hello, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, smashing. This is the second take because we started having this discussion and Chris fucked up the Mac and it wasn't recorded.
Didn't press the record button solidly enough, so...
I've already discussed the
you
fact
can
that...
You can be forgiven, guys.
Thankfully, that was only like a minute as opposed to getting into it for 5 minutes.
2 hours
down
the line. Yeah,
that hasn't been recorded.
So, you tell me, last night you stayed up to about 4 a.m. drinking eating fry-ups, is that
we recorded a podcast last night with my pal Mike, who was in a couple of bands that had done well, and he was going through his songs, and he chipped off, and we normally record at my little bar at the end of my garden.
Right, at the end of your garden?
Yeah, it's a shed.
Okay.
But
that sounds a bit like my brother.
Yeah, it's called the Whiff Inn. and so we ended up staying down there and having a few beers, and then we was actually going through Elastica Records and stuff on MTV, yeah. On YouTube and stuff last night, weren't we? And then somehow it spiralled into PJ Harvey led us into Nick Cave. That's and then it, we just had a Nick Cave binge, and it was like 3 o'clock, it's time to go to bed, isn't so we're
But I feel all right today. Yeah, I feel quite alert.
Yeah. It sounds like my brother's got a bar. Yours is the Whiff Inn. Is his Dan's bar. And it's
right.
It's got all the. It's got a pool table. And
oh wow, mine's not that posh.
Yeah, well, he's a bit more rural probably.
Yeah.
And he's got a few arcade machines and.
Oh wow.
Sega Rally and all that. And it's,
oh really?
It's, yeah, he's gone to town on it. And any rock and roll memorabilia that I can give him, you know.
Yeah.
For instance, he's got the old Lush bass drum head up, and it's just a nostalgia trip down there. Oh, half a car boot sale and half of it's all right.
I've basically just got photographs of boxers on mine.
Oh, and really? then one of Michael Jackson over your half, over your sort of like fireplace. Yeah.
That is the wife's picture, but I'm not sure.
Well, next time I'm in Essex, then I'm going to have to
come round.
Definitely.
Sounds like an invite. I can't refuse.
Justin, can I ask you just to move that mic slightly closer to you, mate?
Yeah,
just because we are picking you up. But
is that good?
There we go. I think that's better. Yeah.
Lovely. So welcome to Brighton, guys. Anyway, welcome.
I love it.
To the seaside. I know you're not far from the sea anyway, really, are you?
We're on the Thames.
It's all the same. It's all water.
It's all
leads out to the sea.
I've not been to Brighton. I think last time we came to Brighton was with Scroobius. Africa Bambaataa at the Hall.
Yeah, I think
I DJ'd for one of your nights.
You done?
No, not the Haunt.
New Era. It was at the time, I believe.
Clock Tower.
Yeah, was that with Matt? Was that with Matt? Yeah. Yeah, he comes.
Strange evening, but.
Was it a busy one or was it really not a busy one?
I won't say.
Yeah, it was one of them.
It was busier where I was DJing, obviously. Because, of course, I had all the right records here.
Obviously. Well, how did we meet, Justin, initially?
I've known you for quite a long time now, haven't I?
Yeah. I think you DJ for someone in Shoreditch, and I was like, oh, wow. Did you DJ for Ronnie?
I must have done. I did do a few nights for Ronnie at a couple of his clubs.
Right, and I think I was like...
And then you put us on, I'm sure, with the Asbo Kid thing.
Queen of Hoxton.
Yes, we did that. And then I think you called me and just said, do you want to do a few more?
You came on a toothbrush and done some stuff and rated, didn't you?
I mean, it's historic, the toothbrush. You know?
Well, let's start on your musical journey a little bit.
Yeah, gotcha.
With the toothbrush then.
Yeah.
Because pre-Elastica, you was...
Well, I played drums for Spitfire.
That's right.
And I can't even remember, but I joined the band, ironically, it was from when I moved to... I came down to Brighton for a day and ended up being in the band, you know. And like a week later or so, we were on tour, and one of those dates was the Pink Toothbrush,
yeah.
I believe.
So how old was you then?
Well, I would have been 18 because I left work about a couple of weeks later after my 18th birthday, because in those days you could sign on. So that was always my game plan. When I moved down to London, the idea was get a job, do what I could to make ends meet for a while, whether it be working in the bakery, which was one of the jobs, or with a view to being in a band. In those days, it was easy to live in London. You know, it's pretty cheap. You could get away with living quite cheaply, and then when you're 18, you could sign on. So that was always my plan.
Yeah.
And of course, when you sign on, you go down a Dole office, and everyone you knew was in a band. So. It's quite a good networking place, really. You know, you're supposed to be looking for job seekers or whatever. That was it. Everyone was trying to find a new somewhere else to go. But yeah, we were on. You know, we played the Toothbrush. I think it was a good night.
Yeah, sure.
It was a good night.
Yeah, Spitfire. I do. While Sunshine.
I played on that track.
That was a fucking killer single. That one.
Yeah, I did that. They'd had a couple before. Couple of VPs, which was...
Well, Sunshine was an EP, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Black cover.
Yeah.
Sort of wheel or something like
that.
I think that was vinyl, red vinyl, I think it came out on as well.
You might be right.
If you got one of those, worth a fortune they are these days. So, and then I did the album. I did the album with them. And then I left just after we'd recorded the record. Because I did, at the same time I was starting to rehearse with Justine and Donna and Annie as a last track. So so I did a couple of records with them, and Spitfire was great. I've got fond memories of that band. It was like your apprenticeship, really.
Yeah.
You know, in those days you'd get in a van, you'd go up and down the country.
Yeah.
You know, night after night. Like I was saying, you didn't really need a lot of money, and it was, as long as your rent was being paid, and the whole point of being in the band then was, you know, you'd play, you'd get food and drink, and you'd be playing every night.
That's
and that was it. And
you'd be playing all year
You know, I don't know if many bands do that anymore. There's lots to be said for getting in the back of a transit van. And,
yeah.
I mean, Jeff, the singer, used to announce at the end of the night, you know, end of the gig, thanks for coming and all the rest of it, and say, can anyone put us up?
Yeah.
And we would just be crashing on people's floors every night. I mean, but we were touring, that was all that mattered. Yeah. People were coming to the gigs. And then on the back of that, because the band was good and tight and it played a lot, it would get, we had some decent supports, like the Lush Tour, which has come full circle on that one. Blur, the Leisure Tour, which was brilliant, because obviously Blur were then at their peaking point already, you know.
Yeah.
They'd had an album which had been successful
and a
top 10 single, which was slightly unheard of in those days, you know, for an indie band to get on top of pops.
Yeah.
And it was the Uni Tour, which, you know, or bring back university tours.
Yeah.
What else do you want? You know, like, as you were saying, it wasn't like amazingly paid or whatnot, but you were sort of like cutting your teeth and learning a sort of craft and absolutely having a blast with it.
Exactly.
And, you know,
for a musician at 18 years
old, you know, I mean, you know, what you do have now is, I guess, music colleges, but in some ways that's put a damper on it in many ways, because the only gigs they do is through the college.
Yeah.
Really. You've got to get out there. Still,
you
just got to get out there and go and play. I mean, one, you're going to become a better musician, which is not be all and end all, but you're going to get the experience of playing.
Yeah.
But if there was more opportunity for bands to do that, I think there'd be a lot better bands around, and everyone would stop worrying about individually trying to get what they can and become a session musician or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it was a gang. You know, Spitfire was a gang. It was like the Clash or something. You know, it's just everyone's living together and making a racket and making mistakes together. But learning fast, and you do learn fast.
Yeah, well,
we've got, you've kind of put together two lists for us.
Yeah.
So, do you want to tell us what the first list we're going to do?
Well, when you asked me to do this, it was kind of, I tend to think of, you know, what is your favourite? What is your top 10 of this, or top 5? And we're going to look at sort of top 5, but I struggle to think of a top 5, really, because there's so many.
It's hard. Yeah.
I don't think I could ever get a top. I've probably got five number ones. Number twos and five, and you know, so to narrow it down a little bit, I kind of see it as five songs that I've got some sort of connection with.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a different way. I hope that doesn't spoil the game when I have to get out of jail free card early on. But it's almost like five singles, five records.
Yeah.
Which means something to me.
Yeah.
And so I've chosen the 80s for out of those categories for the first bit, which and a lot of the choices as I go through is really because I've got some sort of memory that is attached to it.
Yeah.
And it might not necessarily always be the lyrical content or what that record meant to me.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's what a lot of what this is about as well, because it's sometimes fun to sort of like try and get reminisce and think of the things that have influenced you or that have stuck with you. And it's when we looked at this, there's a lot of these, you know, when you go online these days, there's a lot of those like your top five, they're always like clickbait for people to look at, top five celebrity outfit malfunctions and stuff like that, just for people click on there and then they realise, what am I doing with my life? Yeah. This is a poor life choice. And we thought we'd do one where we could actually really have a good conversation about things that matter to people that we know or who are inspiring in different fields, and actually just have a good dig deep into what has influenced them, what they love. Mm. And if they rate it, fine. If they don't, that's absolutely fine. Because we never really, as I say, this is a new format for us. So it's not about what one's got to be the best. It's try and narrow it down. Because if we were going to do like the top 20, then it almost doesn't mean anything. Yeah, what's your top 100 favourite movies?
Well, that's like doing the polls at the end of the year, isn't it? The music poll. I mean, when I first moved to London, I was lucky enough to get a job at a place called Music Box, which was great. They used to have a rock program called Raw Power and Indie One Transmission, and a couple of like sort of like Saturday morning sort of shows. I think Pat Sharp was one of the presenters and that sort of thing. But one of my jobs every week was to compile a top 10. Now, it wasn't down to record sales or the Gallup charts or anything. I used to just get The Enemy, The Melody Maker, Smash It, blah, 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 and go, well, that one's been at number two for a couple of weeks. And I'd just make them up. And that's how we would do the chart show.
I'd be watching the chart show just thinking, please be the indie chart this week, please be the indie chart. And so I'd think, fucking hell, they're at number one. And that was just you going, that's probably good enough.
But that was one of my little jobs, you know, formatting tapes and running around. My title as traffic coordinator, which, what does that mean? It sounded good, didn't it? Gave me another £20 a week. And then I'd have to do this chart. I'd go and scribble it down, and just get it down to the editing suite, and they'll put this chart show together.
That is brilliant. There's people out there being influenced by your put scrambling it together, and you know, that's brilliant though.
So I've just chosen a bunch of tracks which I kind of guess they sort of mean something to me, really. So I thought I'd start off with one which is never leaves the record bag.
Okay.
And because it's always a if I'm on a flat spot when I'm DJ, not that I've done a lot of DJing recently, I've always put on Salt and Pepper's Push It. And that has been my get out of jail free card. Has, you know. I mean, another one that I probably would have put on was Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
In the right place would always work.
Yeah.
But Push It is kind of, for me, was great. I mean, the drums are great. And the best thing about that track, really, is it was a B-side.
When you said that, I did a bit of digging as well.
Yeah. It was a B-side to Tramp, something like that, and a year later. Because it was you know, people preferred it than the A side. Have
you heard Tramp? Have you heard it?
Yeah.
It is. I do not like it. It. No wonder. But I can't even imagine how they put those two together even and pressed it and went, oh, that's the B-side. Like, they were having a bad day when they decided to make that a B-side.
Yeah.
It, like, the production difference between Tramp and Push It, it's a different league. Tramp is, like, really basement sort of early doors of a group sort of making music. And Push It is, like, it was finesse, and like you say, it is like
from the get go as well. The minute it starts, instant, isn't it? You're gonna dance.
It's got everything. It's got that thing to dance to. I think to me that is a gateway into rap. It was definitely. We were talking about before we started this. Like, what was it now? Now that's what I call Music One. Was your first record?
Yeah.
For me, it was Rap Attack.
Yeah.
And
Rap Attack. I don't know.
Amazing. And Salt and Pepper's on there. And that was like my gateway to learning how to rap, was rapping Push It, man. Yeah. It's so catchy.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Well, back in the 80s, we used to go through that stage of sharing records with mates and stuff. And the Beastie Boys, License to Ill, was the big one.
Yeah,
that one just stood out. Seeing girls rapping.
Yeah.
It was like, this is brilliant. I kind of hooked into that. And I think it's still the original version that I got, you know.
Yeah. The video was powerful, wasn't it? It like, they looked brilliant, and like their dancing was slick as fuck, and like it just, the whole thing was just like, fucking hell, this is brilliant. Like, these girls just look cool as you like, and there was a lot of swagger, and they done alright after that as well, didn't they? Fucking huge.
We're doing designs for our next fashion release for the clothes company we do, and it's all 90s. Streetwear, and also the golden age of hip hop, which obviously Salt and Pepper were right at the start of late 80s, coming into the 90s as well. And even there, like you say, videos were slick, what they were wearing was really memorable, and it was different to say, like the Beastie Boys. And again, that's one of your favourite all time records, isn't it? License to Ill.
Yeah, we were talking last night, saying like that was for albums that kind of turned me on to something new. When that came out, License to Ill, I was probably 13, 14, it was like, this is the first time I felt like energy in music, where I just felt a little bit of anger as well, and it was like, well, this is different, and like, oh, brilliant.
Well, there was, back home, it was almost like, everyone was trying to be a little bit in the crew and all the rest of it, and no one really was, everyone's harmless, but it just gave you a little bit more muscle, that record, almost. Not that we needed muscle, and there was no gang rivalry from a state to a state, but if you had that one, you knew something was cool.
Yeah.
Do you know, they're listening to the Beastie Boys, they're listening, it just had an element of cool about it.
Did you go out robbing the BW songs?
No, I didn't do that, no. Friends of mine might have.
Sick record cover, amazing artwork on the front of that.
Yeah.
Well, we used to hang out on this sort of park, which had like a concrete football pitch with like concrete sort of goals. And it was all laid out with the lino and where the boom box would be.
Yeah.
It was like just pathetic, really. But anyway, that was the kind of thing. And the Electro albums were big at the time.
Massive, yeah.
Electro 1 and Electro 2, those two records were massive,
Huge.
Really, really good records.
So, well, as we're getting through your choices and that, now, if you get a chance to sit down and listen to music, or if you don't sit down and listen to music, whenever you listen, how do you listen to music? What format and how do you take it in? Is it in the car? Do you ever sit down and think, well, for the next hour, I'm going to listen to music? And how do you take in music now, Gus?
Well, I would say, normally, my biggest way of listening to music is, I still got my 1210s, still got my decks. Although they, at the present, they're being serviced for the summer, but it's really always been vinyl. I've never liked CDs. I've got half a dozen CDs. I just charity shop them or give them away. And it's a good format for listening on, but it's never really, in the car, they'd be lying around in the car. I used to love cassettes, but really it's always been vinyl. I mean, we do at home, my wife and I have got a very little Sony, like a Bose speaker thing for everyday radio and thing. But really, it's when I want to listen to music properly, and seriously, then it's either a headphones moment or
right.
The decks. I mean, we've just moved at the moment, we're in between places, so a lot of our stuff is in storage, which is why the decks are getting serviced as well. Because when we move, we want them set up. But we also have Vinyl Friday. That was a big thing in our house. So in whatever format you play music during the week, whether radio on or whatever, you know, the radio is always on. As long as it's just on the background, Radio 4 or 6 music. Vinyl Friday is always quite a tradition, really. I mean, it goes way back, I think, because my parents are and still are massive vinyl fans. My dad's got 2 jukeboxes. Thousands of 7 inches.
Yeah.
My brother's got loads of vinyl as well, and he's got his own bar. We talked about you've got your own bar. Yeah. He's got a load of that going on. But as kids, I sort of remember my parents dancing a lot to Motown. You know, Diana Ross and the Supremes. Yeah. You know, Reflections, which was a big one. Always sticks in my. I love that tune. But they used to always dance in the kick tune and that kind of thing. And they still do. If we go to theirs on a weekend, it's, you know, the wine's cracked open and the jukebox is on and they love it, you know. And they still buy lots of records. Still, my dad still buys lots of vinyl.
Yeah.
And so much that offer it's in boxes now.
Yeah.
But he's just can't help himself, you know. If he goes to a car boot sale or something, he can't help himself.
It's impossible.
It's a social thing as well. Like, you know, I've seen a change in some of my parts of my family, the dynamic in their family as things like technology has come in, where sometimes I can go around there and go out my way to see them, you know, and then there's points when we're in their lounge and all three of them are on their phone. And it's like, fucking hell, you know, I see you once every 3 months. And I think things like Vinyl Friday, it's a way to listen and enjoy it and engage with each other that isn't about something that's not outside of that room. And I think a lot of that we're losing that. And you kind of, it's good that you stuck to the vinyl because it's all coming back around now. You're like, oh, you've stuck to your guns and it's paid off.
I have to confess though, I am not great at looking after my vinyl.
Oh, neither am I.
My vinyl is there as a tool to be used.
I'm 100% agree with that.
You know, play it.
Yeah.
You know, and often, you know, it's like, oh, damn, I should have took more care of that. Yeah. Look at the state of that. But I've seen it be played.
I completely agree. Some of my mates have a go at me because of the state of my vinyl collection and that. And all my, like, I've got drum and bass, quite a lot of drum and bass.
Right.
Jungle, and probably a few of those are worth something. But, oh, God, I've had some parties. Yeah. And you look at it.
But they're like battle scars. Fuck,
you know, they've got that.
What's wrong with a battle scar? I've got a track, the Sneaker Pimps. 12-inch, love that. And it's got a massive chunk out of it, half moon, but still got enough of that 12-inch which I can use to mix in with something. Oh, great. That's fine, still in the record
pack. I've got records that I hear on the radio, and because I know that I've got that on vinyl and it's got a scratch on it, but sometimes I hear it on the radio I think, oh, I forgot about that bit. Because, like, on my record that I've rinsed it just jumps. In, like, it completely cuts that out because it's scratched. But what you're saying about Vinyl Fridays and things like that, it's so brilliant. It's like, we have, like, people over, we'll sit in my bar and we'll have Spotify on and we're just talking about whatever and the music's just in the background. Behind my bar was where I keep my vinyl and I've got a little sort of office space, but the decks are down there as well. But sometimes it's like, who wants to go and play some records? Brilliant. And then, when we're in there, music is at the forefront then. And then we're talking music and people are looking at the sleeves and that conversation appeals to me more just because I'm an anorak for music. But it's just seeing people that haven't, a lot of people, my friends, haven't got record players anymore and sold all their vinyl at boot sales and stuff, I'm sure.
Like having a dog.
It is. But I said to
you, you've got a dog, it's a really conversation.
When I got my Dex app for the first time, like years and years ago, probably about 5-6 years ago, I said to my daughter, I said, do you want to come and play some records? And she said yes, and was completely unaware of what I was talking about. And I said, right, yeah, look. And I think she was probably maybe 8 at the time. And the never seen a record player.
Voodoo magic, when you put a needle on it.
She was so used to picking her phone up and pressing something and getting music, she couldn't. Like, it was really interesting seeing someone put a record on for the first ever time and not knowing what it was going to do. And putting a needle on a piece of plastic and it blew her mind. Yeah. And it was like, it was just a really sweet thing to see. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Someone like experiencing playing a record for the first time. You think, hopefully, you know, the future now means that they'll, you know, people are going
to
do this.
Well, there is, I mean, there's this trend coming back, you know, like I said to you, I think before, about, you know, you can go into stores such as Urban Outfitters or whatever, and you can buy turntables again. You know, this is great. Doesn't mean they're the best quality, but who cares if people are buying records and listening to music in the physical sense, then that's definitely
and if people enjoy it and they get that, they get a bit edgy about it, then they can then go and you can go for broke, can't you?
I think most people growing up, I didn't get my 1210s until about 5 years ago because I could never afford them when I was a kid. I had a Matsui or a Seisho or you know, some cheap hi-fi system. And I think when you're kids, I don't think you're looking for that pristine sound quality. You just want to play your records, you just want to hear your music, and if it's got a bit more of a crackle and a shitty speaker, it's not the end of the world, is it?
I think I was I looked after my vinyl a lot more when I was younger because it was something my collection, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I think then you get a little bit sort of passé after a while about sort of, oh, okay, I've got thousands of records, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all right, stick them on, and
yeah,
you know, I wish I had looked after them to some degree, a bit better when I think of particular ones. But you think, well, sod it, you know, they're in that condition because they've been heard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And many people have listened to them.
Yeah. It's that argument of that's coming bounding around a lot these days about experience or material gains, you know, and would you rather have an experience or would you rather have a car?
Yeah.
And like, people are realising now that actually experience is way more important than something that you've got parked or kept somewhere. But I collect comics and I do keep them mostly in pristine condition.
Are they worth something?
Some of them are. Yeah. I've got one that I would say is actually effectively priceless.
Wow.
A good friend of ours, Scroobius Pitt, got me for a birthday 5 years ago, a comic signed by the guy who wrote it. But when he wrote it, his relationship with that comic broke down, and he doesn't ever have anything to do with that comic really these days.
Right.
And yet I've got his signature on that comic,
right.
And he's as big as they come in that world. So it's effectively
shouldn't exist. Yeah.
So, you know, and in fairness, I should probably have that in some kind of like airtight vacuum. I've got it in good protective packaging, but I never had that. I think I had that to start with in my records, a bit like you, Justin, and then I think the more and more my social group expanded and you play records for people or you go around someone's house to have a mix and you're having fun, I don't know, it was more about everyone having fun than it was me being able to keep that wrapped up indoors.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But I think I had a set of Cam Delt drives to start with and they weren't that good. But when I bought my Technics, I think 1200s at uni, off my student loan. That's the only way I could afford it. That's the only way I could afford it. But all my money was going on alcohol and drugs, effectively. Yeah, yeah. And all my friends were like, if we don't do something, we're going to like just have the...
Well, if you could have been, you know, you're enterprising, basically. If I could get, you know, if someone's going to hire me, and I could make these things at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, mine are second hand ones, but, I mean, I had some Newmarks for ages.
Yeah.
And they were cheap. And they did the job, but I always wanted some Technics.
Wouldn't you? Everyone wanted them, and I could never afford them. And when I was DJing,
about £400 each,
wasn't it?
Yeah, grand with a mix.
Grand, yeah, it was.
Anyone got a spare grand?
Yeah, no.
Certainly not.
Should have come to me. I'd have lent you some of my own.
I remember, literally about 3 years ago, my mate went, I want to flog my 1210s on, put it on social media. Does anyone want them? And I was like, how much? And he was like, £100 each. And I went, I'll have them. So I was like, brilliant, I've got my 1210s at last. You know, every club I've worked in, I've DJed on them and wanted them.
Yeah.
Could never afford them. But for £200, I think about 3 weeks later, Technics announced that we're going to stop making them.
Yeah, that's so true. I was like, brilliant. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I've
Well, I salvaged one from, which was the motor had gone on it.
Yeah.
I'm digressing a bit from the news, but I salvaged one from one which was being chopped out. yeah, the motor was gone. Any record you put on it was playing at about 500 miles an hour. We managed to get a friend of ours to put a new motor in. Works absolutely fine. You know what I mean? You can get all the parts to them.
They're hard. They really are. You can knock them about. I've seen them dropped. You know, and they're not like the cheap plastic ones. We're doing an advert for Technics here, seeing as they've re-released them.
I know. Yeah.
But they are. They are the ones.
To this.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's well, and again, that thinking about Technics, but that's, you know, the home of hip hop as well. So when you go back to thinking about Salt and Pepper and Mr. Boys and any of that early hip hop, I mean, just before we move on, I've got NWA and Public Enemy original vinyl.
I have looked up those.
You know, first pressings of those, and they're in immaculate condition.
Very exciting records as well.
They are.
I vividly remember one of the resident DJs that we used, Art Destruction. We went to Gravesend on the ferry from Tilbury, and he went, "I'm going to buy it." We went to this record shop, and he bought two copies of it because he was a DJ, a scratch DJ. And he went, "Yeah, you got to check this out." And we ended up getting back round his house, and he just pulled out two copies of Straight Outta Compton, and I'd never heard it. And he just put it on, and I was like, holy shit, what is this? It was like, this is hard. Mm. You know, Public Enemy had a hard sound, but it upped it. Do you know what I mean? It's got harder and darker. Them horns are just fucking dark, brilliant.
It's got the Amen breaking it as well, in everywhere.
See, for me as well, all that early hip hop and stuff was, because I play drums, so it's just immediately straight in there with the rhythm side of it.
It's way
before I even get into any of the lyrical content on it. It's just like, if you're feeling good from the backbeat,
definitely.
And I'm halfway there already on the record.
And that's how it started, wasn't it? It was playing those almost those drum solos in between songs. And that's the good bit of the record, that fucking 20-second jump. So they just kept, you know, Cool Herc and that just kept playing that one bit, and that's where it sort of stemmed from.
Well, there's a few other tunes on here that I've picked. We've got the same thing. Reason being it's because of the drums, really, mainly. You know.
What's your next choice then, Jess? What do you want to pick next?
Well, we're talking about the drums, but I've gone for Japan and, 1981... Quiet Life.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're talking about sort of DJing, but again, this is always a winner for me. The 12-inch version of Quiet Life. Is again, sometimes, you know, you can pick up, particularly in my Elastica days. This was always like around the house parties. It was always being played. You know, we love this tune.
And
one day I am going to do a remix of it, and I keep saying it, because it's crying out for it.
Yeah.
You know, that sequence of pattern. And those 16th note hats. It's brilliant. You know, I just again, it's great. And Steve Jansen was a really underestimated player, really. I mean, I was as big a fan as I thought it was, but it was only a few years later that I realised he was David Sylvian's brother.
Oh, really?
They did the Dolphin Brothers thing together. Do you know that? They did a solo record.
No, I didn't.
I guess. Solo record, the end of Japan, but
but
they were brothers. So, but he kind of, obviously, Steve Jansen sort of kept a sort of back seat and all that. Obviously, David Sylvian was the pin-up. A lot of stuff with Japan, really. I mean, in my early days of being in bands, when I was at school, I joined a band which was quite 80s, and everyone was was older than me. And the bass player, Tim, who subsequently moved to London with, he used to drive us to Leicester. But he was a big Duranny, you know, he loved Duran Duran. And I wasn't so much on preferred of all, and I think I've always had that sort of darker side. So I just remember driving back from rehearsals, it was a, he had a terrible sunbeam, and the cassette player was on the floor, you know what I mean, where he'd wired it in himself. It was either Duran, he's like, oh, I don't know, fucking Duran, you know what I mean? But occasionally we'd get into the darker stuff, and, maybe it was to do with how the rehearsals had gone. But the Japan stuff I kind of really got into. So that's kind of like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of Japan stuff. I mean, on that same album, there's, what's the track? Second That Emotion.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to stick my neck out here, and I think for me that's actually better than the Smokey Robinson version. No, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but me. Or maybe it was because I'd heard that one before, or I was sick and my mum and dad dancing to it in the kitchen. Turned it off in my head, but yeah, I quite like that version.
Interesting, because I think
I'm allowed to stick with it, I'm going to get some flack.
No, mate, you go for it, because I think later on I might get flack for other things I say later on that mirror very similar to that on versions and stuff like that. But no, that was cool, man. Quite Life's a fucking banger, and we even did a we did a cup night with Mark Moore.
Quiet
Life was the event we done with Andy from Erasure.
No, it was Mark Moore, surely.
Mark Moore was
oh no, of course not. Yeah.
Was the Basquiat influenced I think what it was called.
Blanco?
No, I can't think.
Too many club nights we've done. I thought it was Quiet Life with Mark Moore, mate.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But sometimes you have to make a track your own, you know? I grew up in the Midlands and you know, there was a lot of the mod stuff happening and you know, I've liked that. I've some of my roots are from that one. Growing up, my daddy's playing with the Who and, you know, the Kinks.
So did you catch that kind of second mod revival? Was you
little bit.
Was you old enough, or was you catch any of that mod revival?
A little bit, but to be honest with you, there wasn't a huge amount of, I mean, the Midlands, I was from Nuneaton, and Coventry is the sort of the closest city. So there was a little bit of the mod thing, but for me, the specials, the specials, which was, I guess in some ways, might have been the first real band I could probably call my own.
Right.
I loved The Jam, and one of my first records was The Jam, This Is a Modern World album. Yeah. Again, just sit there and look at the pictures. And, that picture on the back of the band. Like, that's what it's like to be in a band. Jumping off of the drum or whatever. But I think it was the specials. And still today, if you go back there, I think most people say that's ours. You know, the specials.
Yeah.
Not that any of them probably live in Coventry anymore.
Neville does.
Does he?
He's got...
Does he?
No, but I've got friends that live in Coventry. I've got there quite a lot. And my mate runs a butcher's. And he's lived in Coventry all his life. He's a massive specials fan.
Right.
and every one of his mates sees Neville Staples walking around. And like, literally, any day that my mate Mark's not working, Neville will come in and buy sausages and stuff like that. And he's lived all his life and's never met him, to the point where, like, oh yeah, I see Neville again today. He's like, fuck's sake, seriously, come on, why have I never met like, fucking Neville? But apparently, I think there's
been doing 7 day weeks for months now to try and catch him. But he's eating those sausages by now.
There's a Scar Cafe in Coventry, and I think Neville's involved in that.
Possibly.
Was a selector from Coventry as
Because there's a lot of the two tone label was Coventry, so a lot of the bands there were on it. But for us, I was saying that we could sort of call it, they were our band, else was happening. I guess it was similar if you're into the Scar thing, the two-tone thing with Madness up in London or whatever.
Yeah.
But really, for us, it was the Specials. You know?
Yeah.
But I was a little bit late. I was kind of getting into them. They were a little bit older than me. And I was starting to get into the 80s kind of production in many ways. Some of the stuff I like. I mean, the indie stuff in the early 80s wasn't actually that great.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, the Primitives were from Coventry. And I guess you've got Echo and the Bunnymen, which was all the Smiths, which is the good stuff, but I don't really know much of that sort of era, really. A lot of the bands were major label kind of artists, I suppose.
And you had the postcard scene going on at that time, didn't you? Yeah. Up in Scotland and that, but...
Of course,
I'll get what you said.
Sure, a lot of Virgin Records was probably almost seen as an independent in some ways.
Yeah, major, for sure.
And a lot of those the kind of cool acts are on the sort of Virgin.
New Wave was coming in, wasn't it? Yeah. And I think Japan always were like, we're not New Wave. They're like, we know that we've influenced you guys, especially in dress, but we live like this. You go and put that on at the weekends, but I get up and I put this shit on, you know. It's like, so don't stop calling us New Wave, you know. Yeah. We're off on some other thing, you know, glam and rock.
But I guess because of that side of it as well, I always had like sort of pop, you know.
Sensibility, a little bit influenced
always from that sort of pop stuff, really. Mm. You know, like, I do at the end of the day, like a good song, I guess, verse and chorus, not really into the, you know. Someone said to me the other week, I was teaching someone drums, and they it was their dad, and said, there was a metal band playing in one of the rehearsal rooms, and I went out and said, yeah, your son's doing really well, whatever. And he turned and said, you must have gone for a metal stage. And I went, no, never.
We have this conversation because when we do the Pip podcast, Pip and Chris, they were of a generation that called new metal when it all happened with blah, and you get so excited that you're talking about Limp Bizkit and all of that. And that I've never had that metal point.
No. We were like 18 when that sort of come in, and it was good. It was exciting. They were, you know, a lot of that was like a little bit of rock and a little bit of rap in there, and some turntablism, and I think we all got caught up. And I don't think it's not aged particularly well.
It's maybe what it is.
Yeah, it hasn't aged particularly good. Some bands survived, did Deftones and stuff like that, but they weren't strictly new metal. They always felt more like metal to me.
Yeah,
the thing is, there is, at the end of the day, there's no real shit music, whether it be something. It's just different tastes. You know?
Yeah,
there's something,
definitely.
If so-and-so over there likes this, you've got no right to say that's rubbish.
No,
if they're getting something out,
it
comes in waves and it might not be to your taste, but it's still someone else is getting off on it. So
exactly,
that's a good thing.
If it's not destroying your shelter or your food supply, I mean, it's all right to exist, right? A mate of mine, he's called David Walker. He's an artist, right? He's a really good artist. He lives in Berlin these days, but I was having this chat with him. And he agreed with all that, but we was talking about like manufactured music to an extent. And I was like, well, you know, it doesn't matter. If people are enjoying it and that, people, if that's how they consume music, it's really good. And again, it mirrors what we were saying sort of here. But he also said, but if shit is the only thing on the menu, you're going to end up eating shit. It's like if they're only churning out fucking utter dirge from on the mainstream, then yeah, we would miss out quite a lot on all the good stuff. So. Yeah,
but it's your choice, isn't it? You don't have to like it.
Yeah, that's right.
Or let them be. Let them squander in their own shit. Or you find some other shit.
Yeah.
So just quick on why drums? Yeah. Because you're the guy that's always there first. You're the guy that's still putting all this shit away when everyone else is having a pint and like it's
that's depending what level you're at.
it is, of course.
but you do have to do a bit of that initially at the beginning.
Yeah.
I tried the harmonica, which would have been the perfect instrument.
Brilliant.
Just turn up with
it. Pop it in the pocket.
But yeah. My dad used to play drums. Right. And I think it was when we were kids, there was my believing of the story is that there was a red little kit turned up, and it was bought off a neighbour or something like that, which was a bass drum, tom, and a snare, and a hi hat. That was it. But I think it was an excuse for my dad to have a drum kit. It was for me. There was no one teaching drums, so there was no way I could have lessons or anything like that. I used to just smash around it and then. And then that sort of got done up a little bit and then sold. Another kit turned up. It was the same thing. I wasn't learning. So parents sold that and then they got us a little bass. There's always been music in the house. My parents have always encouraged us to do whatever we wanted to do, really.
Yeah.
And then because of the nature of them and the music, I think they kind of wanted us to pick something up. We had a K guitar and all this stuff went by the wayside. And then a mate of mine at school used to go around his grandma's at lunchtime and he had the drum kit. Yeah, he didn't even have it his own, but it was opposite school, so he sort of pissed off over there. And he could play a bit. And I just got into it, started picking it up. So I guess that sort of enthused it again, really.
Mm.
And they always said, my parents, that they would get me another one if I learned. But I started to sort of take ownership of a bit of practice, and I had a practice pad and a bass drum skin and a hi-hat, and just sit on my bed and just work it out like that. But got a Saturday job, and I saved up a bit of money, and they gave me a bit of money, and I managed to get this drum kit from the local music shop. And that was it, really. Just putting headphones. And also, we're talking about the 80s here.
Yeah.
What I used to just do when we talk about the stereo, I used to do the same thing. My buddy used to watch movies all the time. He was like the first kid that I knew had a video. Proper conk-click 80s video.
Yeah.
But he was into all these big blockbusters, all his Terminator movies. And but I used to just practice in my room, stick the headphones on and play along to whatever, you know. I used to save all my dinner money, and there's a little record shop in town called Watt Records. And used to have the 80s, massive, 12 inches, wasn't it? Just extend it by
a maxi single.
I used to go and buy a record every day from the record shop.
Yeah.
And just take it. I didn't even know what it was half the time.
Yeah.
You know, there were like 20p, 30p in the record basket as you walked to the shop. And that was how I started building the collection. But that's why drums. My dad was a massive Who fan.
Yeah.
And a friend of the family, first records I had really, apart from the Jungle Book, was a bunch of Kinks albums.
That's
amazing. So, again, just all the physical and like that. But it's only later when I started really trying finding my own thing but for me, there was only me and my mate. It's at school we had the drum kit. There was only two of us in town that I knew played drums. So I used to cycle past the music shop on the way to school, and which was always my technique, even when I moved to London. But just answer the adverts for Drummer Wanted, even though I was at school.
Yeah.
All these bands were looking for drummers, so I ended up being in a couple of bands even at school.
Because it isn't that, for parents to be like, yeah, come on, let's get you a drum kit. It's not all parents saying that, is it? Because, it can be quite loud. And it was a unique thing.
Yeah.
My mum, I had a drum kit for a year, off a friend, and I had that in my third year of uni. I had a huge a room about this size at uni, which you wouldn't believe. I was really lucky. And I had it set up in there, and I fucking loved it. And when I come back to Essex, I had nowhere for it. You know, I had just nowhere to play it or whatever. So that's where it sort of ended. I obviously didn't have the affinity or the drive to want to push past that. But yeah, so to have that, I think it is sometimes harder for drummers to get that opportunity to practice, isn't it?
I mean, this kit I bought, which is I just wanted the black drum kit. That's what I wanted. I thought that'd be cool. Get a black drum kit. Seemed like the coolest thing to, but I didn't know anything about makes or which one to have as such. And what's it called? It's called Track or something like that.
Right.
And it had like white heads on it. So eventually they got trashed and we had to replace them. And then he took like the first tom off and it was like compressed cardboard. And then the actual shell of the drum. And then the other tom was like a really badly cut wood of whatever this was.
Yeah.
It was basically like a prototype kit. That's why it was 200 quid. Like the beginning of what now you get starter kits everywhere.
Yeah.
But it did me all right for a while.
Yeah. Again, I think there's a lot to be said for not going out and buying the best of things when you're starting, you're venturing into something new. You know, people a lot of the time, I've got to get the best. It's like, you might pick that up and put it down next week. What's the point in
DIY?
Well, this is really, I mean, this goes on that whole thing of just like I said, with the Spitfire thing, it was just learning my apprenticeship, really. I didn't really know what to do, what was the do, no, any rudiments of drumming. I mean, just listen to a record and play along. That was my education, and that is
fun from what I experienced in doing that and playing.
Well, I got. I think one of the biggest things I got, having learned X amount and able to sort of learn enough to get in a band and work, play with like-minded people was feel really. Records. That's where you're going to get it. Playing a Motown record, or playing a hip hop record, or a punk rock record, or something. Because they've all got. The same beat could be throughout three of them.
Yeah.
It's just how you apply that, you know. So I think that's one of the things. And also, 80s, was everything was quite a sequence. Everything was metronomic. For me, I think that's... I've learned quite a lot. I'm quite good with clicks.
So any of the next ones on this list, anything that you might have had on your headphones when you was driving along?
Well... Quiet Life, yes, definitely. I mean, we'll come to choice number four in a minute, but choice number three is a prime example, really.
Okay.
Which is Simple Minds and Love Song.
Mm-hmm.
Sons and Fascination album was a great record, but the album I loved that was that record. Just even now, again, we talked about sort of having it in the DJ bag.
Yeah.
It's a feel good record.
Mm.
Recently done a little bit of work for Simple Minds.
And, really?
Well, not in playing sense, in the production side for a company that I do some work for, management company. And it's been nice being on the other side of the fence when they were kind of... Mal Gaynor was quite a big influence early on when I was playing that hard-hitting sort of straight hand line stuff. I don't even think it is Mal Gaynor. But just being there, and you know, they don't know that, but for me, I've got that sort of super little smile that actually I used to listen to this. It's quite funny how I've ended up doing a bit of backline sort of stuff. But yes, Love Song is just a brilliant stadium kind of feel good track, you know. And again, it's got that 16th note thing, which is the 80s drums, which when learning to play is really difficult to do. Just keeping that going, and I think I kind of sort of hooked into that quite early on. My favourite album actually is Reel to Cacophony.
Yeah.
Reel to Reel Cacophony. I bought that, and that fascinated me, that record, because it was from the What Records.
Yeah.
I bought it in the bargain basement. Just a blue cover.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know who this band Simple Minds were. Until later, even though I had it in the collection for quite a long time. So no one put it on. It's just to say, that's a brilliant cover.
Yeah.
I don't really know anything about this band, but it's a brilliant cover.
Yeah.
And the for me, it never gets played, that record. Not only my house does, but no one ever talks about it. I just think it, and the playing on that record, it's really, really, it's quite, there's a lot of Kraftwerk influence. Yeah. There's a lot of German Krautrock kind of thing. And I think that's what I like.
Yeah. Well, you say Love Song was a stadium-sized song, and that was obviously the shape of things to come, wasn't it? You know, they went on to be a ridiculously big stadium-filling band for a long, long time, and I guess they still are.
They're doing it again, aren't they? But that live album, jumping again forward, but they brought a live album out, Live in Rotterdam or something. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been. But there was, that was when we were talking about vinyl. That was as a vinyl package.
Yeah.
That was incredible. Just a whole like program in the middle. Yeah. Programs were big for bands in the 80s, weren't they? But they did this whole program of the event, you know, big stadium shots and aerial shots and Al Gaynor playing the drums. And, you know, that's what it's like, isn't it?
They didn't write Don't You Forget About Me, did they?
I don't know.
No. They're kind of, I guess they're Simple Minds track that most people will probably be familiar with. I'm sure I'm right, but I believe it was written specifically for Breakfast Club.
I think you're right.
And it was offered to Duran Duran, and they said no. Right. And it got past the Simple Minds.
Swinging about.
Because they also seemed quite cool again, like those bands for a while, weren't they, Simple Minds?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you listen to, like, Wheels of Rhythm Coffee or something like that, Sons of Fascination, there's some brilliant
Musician-wise
as well. Not like, you know, you're a great musician.
Yeah.
But the production's fabulous. It's brilliant.
It's easy to get pulled into just seeing the Don't You Forget About Me alive and kicking. Yeah. So you go back and it gets a lot darker.
Stuff. And they were just a small band. Again, kind of, I guess, a bit of a new wave.
Some cold sounding records. Yeah. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Really brilliant.
So that was, again, you know, I should say that was probably one of the Simple Minds era. I mean, there was... I went through a kind of Style Council stage a little bit when we sort of moved on from the Specials, but I did get. I like the Jam, but I think the Style Council were more of my time. And I think maybe some of the soul influence coming in from my parents was in those records.
Did you think that Style Council were consistent? Because I don't. I think they've got some incredible records, Style Council, but I just didn't think it was as consistent as the Jam.
Well, Beat Surrender is the Jam's, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I bought that 7-inch, and you know, that was almost like it was as if it was one of Paul Weller's demos of the Jam, and put some horns on it, and you know, get a nice Hammond, and that's where I want to go.
Yeah.
But I guess you're right in many ways. It did. It did that ridiculous thing where I just couldn't work it out. It was like a video for every, I suppose it was the MTV era, it was a video for the album, but they did a video for every song and they changed outfit. Did you ever see that?
No.
So there's Sheila E. at the piano and is it Why I Went Nothing? I don't know the track. But they did this, it's just, they changed outfits, so say they're all in blue and pink, the next outfit, but they're all in white, and they did this for the whole, it's just like losing a little bit of grip on
playing. I think the Style Council,
maybe that was the end when he said, I'm going solo, see you later guys.
That challenge of the Style Council, I presume he got right into his Italian fashion and style and stuff. He was looking sharp. I think Walls Come Tumbling Down is a cracker, and I think Mick Talbot's stuff on that, he sounds pure Motown.
Well, Long Hot Summer is a beautiful song.
Yeah.
If you want a bit of romance.
Yeah. Valentine's Yesterday, your best thing.
He wouldn't have done, mate, because I spent it with you. You popping that on.
Anyway, so there we are. That's a drumming one for you.
Okay, so Where are we at? How many have you got left on this list?
I've got two to talk about, if you want to hear it.
Yeah,
hear
course, yeah man. For sure.
Well, I had to do this. My next artist, I had to get her in there somewhere. I've got a bunch of female artists which are just always sort of been amazing, but she's been talked about a million times, but Kate Bush has just got to be
amazing.
I mean, I was unfortunate not to get tickets to the Kate Bush gig.
Sold
my grandma for that. Sorry, man. I would have done.
How much were they going for those tickets?
And I had people really looking for us to try and get some, and I would have done anything.
I think they must have been so good with security there, because I'm not seeing anything on YouTube from these performances.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
There's nothing really out there, and I've looked just to kind of sort of.
Didn't she ask as well?
Yeah.
She asked, didn't she? And I think the sort of people who've got the sensibilities and taste of Kate Bush, also the people who sort of like respect that, if she was to ask the crowd.
I think so.
You know, it's not like.
I think you're probably right. I think there was her wishes were granted, really.
Yeah.
You know, but there's too many songs, really, with Kate Bush. Yeah. That's the thing. There's a song for any emotion, any event. There's something there for every day of your life with Kate Bush, I think, really. I mean, I really got into it when I was living with Matt from Sway. That was played quite a lot in the house.
What was? Just Kate Bush or any specific?
Kate Bush, it was quite a lot. I mean, I really liked Kick Inside a lot, but I think to top it, The Hounds of Love, for me, is the best out of all of them. I like Central World as well. It's a brilliant, fabulous album.
Mm.
But The Hounds of Love, right from the beginning when the drums come in on is it when the
Run first, up, yes. first
yeah,
track
yeah, yeah.
on it?
Yeah.
She produced that record, you know.
It's a crazy record. That
was Gilmore involved in that.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. But there's incredible musicians on that album as well. And it's just, I mean, there's what's the song of the other, but you've got Cloud Busting, Hello Earth.
Yeah.
Incredible songs. The feel in those songs is brilliant. But it was just more of, I remember that in 85 being played a lot, but then revisiting later on.
Yeah.
And that is an album you can never get tired of, really.
And videos are brilliant.
Yeah.
We've done last night.
They are cracking.
And we put Running Up That Hill on. And I was saying to you last night, when I was very drunk about half past two this morning.
Do you want to have a bath?
That's what you're saying.
Do you want another pint? Is the office still open?
But it was just watching her, almost performance art.
It's like performance art for Running Up That Hill, isn't it? It really
is. The dancing was amazing, the video was amazing, and you just think she's doing that. And that's aside from the fact that she's wrote, produced, played.
Yeah.
And it's a real deal.
How that record's produced, and even Running Up the Hill, it is unique. And even how she sings, even the chorus on that, Running Up the Hill, how she sort of judges that out is really clever. And
lyrically, it's brilliant as well.
It's an album that I'm never going to tire. If anyone puts it on anywhere, it's not. You know, sometimes you might be around somebody's place and there's, I don't mind it, but I've heard it enough a million times.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It can work anywhere. It's amazing. It's more like, oh, wow, you've got Kate Bush down the ground, you know.
Lyrically as well, I think that's what got me. And I didn't really connect with Kate Bush when I was younger. A lot of my roots were quite aggressive music, I guess, and quite heavy. And it wasn't until sort of mid-20s that I was really listening started dialing into people like Kate Bush. And actually, even like, we were talking about what records do you prefer, and I really dialed into Hounds of Love because of the Future Heads version of it.
Yeah.
And but it was I love how they've covered that. I think it's the shit, you know. I mean, if you don't like that, I mean, maybe because you've heard it so much, you're sick of it. But it's fucking banger.
That'd get you out of trouble on an indie dance.
Oh, that really would. And I don't play it enough.
Yeah.
Mind you, I've done a lot of indie nights. But lyrically on that I get a lump in my throat, and that's not their lyrics. That's Kate Bush's lyrics.
Mm.
I sing along to that song, and I get a lump in my mouth. I feel emotional now, and that's just her poetic vulnerability, and that's what I love about Kate Bush. That side of her that is beautiful.
I remember at the time, like in the early 90s, you know, DJing and that around then, and Tori Amos come out.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I just remember loads of people going crazy for Tori Amos, and I was just like, "You've not checked out Kate Bush.
Yeah.
She's like Tori Amos, but like better."
Yeah,
it's the right way on the piano.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
if you're starting out as a songwriter or anything like that, then you know The Hounds of Love is an album that needs to be checked out.
Yeah,
it's going to influence you in some ways. You know, it's perfection in songwriting. And many of other albums are really, but just for me, that's the one it's kind of like, this is the one.
Yeah.
You know.
Creatively, sort of sticking to your guns as well. Do you know what I mean? Not allowing people to overly drag you away from what she felt was her art form. Mm. You know, not just with the music, but like you were saying, Shu, like all those videos were pretty fucking amazing.
Don't Give Up, that was about the same time, isn't it, as well, with Peter Gabriel, which is a cracker of a song.
Yeah.
You know, and that video is one of the most simplest videos.
Videos, then,
you know, just back to back, just brilliant.
It is. It's a video, very sweet.
Video to A Woman's Work is fantastic. It's what's his face from Blackadder in it?
What's his name?
The Wolves Work is on. It's not on.
We were just looking at the videos.
We were just talking about the videos. I saw that video to that. He's a cracker, and that's on Cut You In Half.
I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's if you haven't visited any Kate Bush stuff. I used to have this reoccurring dream at this time. Now, not in that way at all, but it was this reoccurring dream.
A lot of people did have dreams in that way about Kate Bush.
This is a very different voice. A little bit. I'll tell you the dream, because I can still see it now. I was driving down this lane, and it was chucking down the rain, middle of the night, you know, pitch black in the middle of the night. And I broke down for whatever reason. Car was knackered, flooded away. And Kate Bush drives by in a Range Rover and tows me back to her house and plays the piano while we wait for the RAC to turn on.
What a brilliant dream. Are you sure that's not one of her music videos?
So I used to sit there on the piano at the piano store with Kate Bush while she played away. You know, it's a woman's world. And then, they're waiting for the RAC to turn up. Brilliant. And that's the end of the story.
That's a great theory.
But I was obviously listening to far too much Kate Bush at the time. And I had problems with my car.
I'll definitely go to the RAC, mate. All right,
so... It wasn't the green flag, you know, it was definitely RAC.
So, can we move on to your last choice of this list before we steam through?
I had to think about this one, but I came. We were talking about the top five records, and I guess one of my top five 80s records or records I played to death early on in the 80s, would have been 84 when I was just getting into buying stuff or having my own collection. Was my uncle bought me for Christmas Frank Goes to Hollywood, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Now, some people might go, oh no, on this, but I think this is Trevor Horn at his best.
Definitely.
Mm.
I would sit in the corner on the family stereo with headphones, I'm listening to this record over and over. And in some ways, I've been a bully. I have to confess to being a bully over the years and making people listen to this album from start to finish with no conversation in between. And if there's conversation, then you've got to start again. And just so you get it. I mean, it's incredible. You know, there's almost like the intros, there's like a metaphor.
Yeah. Something.
You know, the way it starts with welcome.
Yeah.
You know, the world is my oyster, and that laugh. it's like almost telling you to go and do something, be something, and do your own thing. And I just love that record. I still do.
And it was dangerous as well, wasn't it? When it came out, like we were talking about last week, because obviously you're a lot younger than Chris didn't know about Relax being banned.
Yeah,
and sort of saying that.
I was outstanding by that when you said that to me last night. I'm like, what? Because it's saying when you want to come.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? But then you think about it, they were quite hot on everything, weren't they?
I heard some stories later on about Frank Cross story when they were making that record. Of course, Holly Johnson and they were just having a ball, thinking about it. Trevor Horn made that record.
Yeah,
cool. They would turn up at the studio and just having a ball. And Debauchery, that was probably going on in that studio. It's Sam West, and it sounds great. It sounds still fascinating now.
It couldn't be replicated live, really, though, could it?
No,
at the time,
I believe not. I would love to have seen them play live, but I believe it wasn't a patch on.
That's what I've heard. They couldn't, because obviously.
Holly Johnson's got an incredible voice.
Amazing.
And I'm shocked really he didn't continue to make that many more records. He did a couple of solo things, but he still could have made some fascinating records. Some brilliant records.
They could have more chance of doing that now, probably.
They did reform for Trevor Horn's birthday thing, some gig, and he played as the Buggles as well.
Right.
And Frankie played, but Holly wasn't fronting them. It was fronted by some guy with a yard, I don't know who he is. And the other guy with the kind of handlebar moustache that was always.
He died though, didn't he? Paul Rutherford, was it Paul Rutherford?
Yes, it. Yeah, didn't he die?
I think he died a few years ago. Don't quote me on that, but I'm sure we should check that out. We'd hate to be spreading a rumour.
So that gig must have been maybe 3-4 years ago. It was Trevor Horn's something, it was a big do, and there was all the different things that he'd produced, all played this huge gig.
Well, I met him once only briefly, a hello at the Depot Rehearsal Studios in Brewery Road up in Camden. It's no longer there, but a lot of bands used to rehearse there back in the 90s, and he was knocking about quite a bit. Seemed really friendly, seemed really nice guy. But Relax. It was a little youth club we used to go to just up the road. And it lasted like a few weeks, like a scout thing. And one turntable, and everyone used to just crowd around that 7-inch because you couldn't hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
It was the era when everyone was trying to record it or whatever, but it was like someone who got a 7-inch, bang, and that was just playing. That was the only record that was put on.
I said to you last night, I said, I went to a working men's club with my dad, and it was 5 people, a record on the jukebox.
Was it?
And Relax was on there, and I'd never heard it, but it was like this record was being banned. So, however old I was, 10 or 11, I was like, I'm doing it. And I put it on, I was like, what are they banned this? I didn't know what, I was probably 10, I didn't know what come meant. And I was like,
exactly.
And I put it on again. And I remember just thinking, this is amazing, this record. And my dad was like, oh, this is shit. And I was like, even better. Do you know what I mean? Everyone around me thinks it's shit, but it felt like I was doing something dangerous, I'd heard Frankie Goes to Hollywood, I'd relax.
Also, the fact that half the band were gay, you'd have no idea, it was almost like they're prejudiced towards them just because they're gay and they're writing about
experiences.
But it's ridiculous,
isn't it?
It was Mike Reed,
it was Mike Reed that was
responsible for that.
But it was, incredible. There was 2 tribes on that record as well.
That's brilliant.
Relax got a killer bass line, isn't it?
Is it the New York mix of Relax, like the full 80s 12-inch version, where it just takes ages to start and it just drops different things slowly, and when it goes, it's like oh, that was worth the wait. It's just fucking brilliant. As well, we mentioned earlier, he shoots really well in the new Trainspotting film.
I've seen it. Yeah.
There's a big kind of scene with Begbie and McGregor, like a chase scene, and Relax he shoots fantastically in that. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, what a record.
Well, this is why I even chose it. I mean, I've still got my original copy of that.
Yeah.
Where over the years, you know, when you do collect records, and you have to clear them out sometimes, or you have to pay the rent, and sometimes a few of them go. Mm. But that stayed. It stayed. So I've still got the original copy. It's in pretty fair condition, to be honest with you. Yeah. But some record that was.
They were huge as well. I mean, aside from the records, like the Frankie phenomena of the Frankie Says t-shirts and slogans, it was ridiculously big.
Frankie
wasn't
Says
it?
No.
Everything about that was as big, or if not bigger, than the any kind of 80s thing you ever see now. Any kind of advertising artwork generally will have a Frankie Says t-shirt thrown in the mix. You know, it's like it was a monster thing aside from the music. And yeah, hopefully it didn't sort of detract anything from it. I do think they don't get
some of the recognition. I've got another friend of mine who's a real Frankie fan. Later found out that he's got all the 12-inches, all the albums, and I think it's one of those bands that don't get any the recognition they should do. Or maybe people haven't heard them. Yeah. In the, 30 years on.
I wonder if the touring thing affected that, if they were, it was more studio orientated because of the layers of production on it, which, like you say, it's great to listen to it as a soundscape and a story, as anything, as an experience. But to then not be able to sort of replicate that, that sort of stopped them a bit dead, on income and revenue, because you've got record sales, but if they're not, they can't do the stadiums like they could have done, because...
Kate Bush and the Hounds of Love, it's the same sort of thing. They're all using fairlights at the time.
Yeah.
And, Kate Bush had stopped playing live, really, at the time the Hounds of Love. So it did obviously have a major effect on how records were made and how you could perform them.
Definitely.
This machine was unstoppable. It was the Terminator of the day. He was going through bands who needs a drummer? Don't need a drummer, use a fairlight. So all drummers were fired pretty much. Bass lines were just programmed as well. Really needed the vocalist after a while.
I mean,
Kate was a different story because of strings and everything going on, but it was the death of a lot of acts, I guess. And cost you about £20 million. No one recouped. They made the record, man. No one recouped because of the price of the higher of the fairlight. Should have just got a drummer in. Could do it for a bag of crisps.
Well, I think should we pause it and have a quick piss?
AWR.
I like it. Clever.
Yeah.
Captain Acronym. I'm going to call you for the rest of the day.
Okay. Thanks,
no
Doctor.
No problem. Hardcore listening with Doctor and Captain. That sounds weird.
Yeah, and dangerous. Thanks for listening to part one. I know you've definitely enjoyed that because it was fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, not because of me and Chris, but purely because
of our guest.
Justin. We won't keep talking. We don't need to keep talking, do we? Because part two is going to be up very, very soon.
Yes.
So go and subscribe. Then you don't have to keep looking for these things. They just pop up on your... stop laughing at me when I say pop up. It's not sexy. It's not weird. It's not creepy. All right, I'll tell you what.
Sure.
Just subscribe and it will appear. that sounds creepy. What won't sound creepy?
Show up. It'll show up.
Subscribe and it will erect itself within your
within your box.
Or go to Acast and check us out on there.
Okay.
We'll see you shortly. Bye.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.